to Not Block Time 2008. It is good to have you all here. Thank you. For those of you who are unfamiliar with God Block Time, God Block Time started about 40 years ago when John Mark Reynolds, Andy Jackson, Pete Hewitt, and a number of other people decided it would be a good idea for Christian bloggers to come together in real life and engage in communal conversation about the web, blogging, and what the future of the technology looked like. The first GodBlogCon was founded and started at the Torrey Honors Institute. Yay, the slider. Torrey and Biola have been presenting and funding GodBlogCon for the last 4 years, in addition to a number of sponsors, and I'll talk about those in just a minute. If you're interested in learning what the Christians are up to in the web, I encourage you to register for GodBlogCon if you're currently just a part of the regular blog world track. You can do so by going to the registration area in the exhibit hall, where you can go ahead and purchase your GBC pass. That will get you into all sorts of exciting things, like our roundtable conversation tonight at 5 o'clock, which is an attendee favorite, and I highly encourage you to participate, especially if you're already registered for GodBlogCon. The roundtable conversation is an excellent time for you to bring your ideas to the table and to really sharpen them and to get the word out about what you're up to. It is a communal conversation, typically led by John Mark Reynolds of the Torrey Honors Institute, who's sitting right over here. And it is really an excellent time for just seeing the landscape of what Christians are up to on the web. Joe Carter, who is not with us this year, the Bono of the blogosphere, has left the room. He has participated in this conversation for the last 3 years, and some of that conversation has led him to his current project at Culture 11, which sadly keeps him from us today, but next year we anticipate that he and Culture 11 will be out here. So all that to say, I encourage you to register, and I encourage you to come to the roundtable conversation, as well as our many other excellent sessions throughout the next 2 days. I want to take a moment and thank the people who helped to make this conference possible, specifically Shane, Juliana, and Chris. I do not know if they're in here right now, but Shane, Juliana, and Chris are my assistant directors. You'll see them in the VIP area. They have done a lot of tremendous work, calling sponsors, organizing things with Freeman and Blog World. They've done great work figuring out exactly what this whole event would look like and coordinating things for the speakers. This conference is run entirely by volunteers. None of us get paid to do this. So for them, this is extra work on top of the work that they do as a part of their Torrey Honors education and their Biola education. Most of them are taking full-time loads and doing this. So if you have a chance to see them, shake their hand and thank them for their work, that would be greatly appreciated. I would also like to thank our sponsors, specifically the Family Research Council, who put on an excellent dinner for us last night. If you had a chance to register for that, it was amazing. And I encourage you to register for next year's dinner when we hold it. Jared Bridges, thank you guys for that excellent dinner. Desiring God as well. Matt Perman, I think I saw you. There you are. Hi, Matt. Thank you, Desiring God, also for sponsoring. They're holding our speaker sponsor dinner this evening. In addition, I would like to thank Stand to Reason, who has been a faithful sponsor of this conference for several years, and Amy Hall is here. Hi, Amy. She talked to them about what they're doing out in California. Acton Institute has also been a great sponsor, and I think I saw Jordan. Is Jordan over here? There's Jordan in the back. They're going to be premiering a film tomorrow. I encourage you to see it. They've been doing some excellent web work, and especially if you're interested in film stuff, the Acton Institute is the place to go. TheHighCalling.org and Marcus Goodyear back over here in the corner, also a great sponsor of ours. Mars Hill Audio Journal, Ken Myers, thank you for coming out. Technology for Worship Magazine, I encourage you to pick that up if you're working in a church and are interested in the technology that churches have going on. Of course, our longtime sponsor, Crossway, who is bringing an exciting new book out called The New Media Frontier. Roger Overton is the editor of that book, and it is a book that originally came as a result of this GodBlog conference. I encourage you to go to the session on that. Uniglory Studios, who has done all of our design work, and Lauren Cassidy back here. If you're looking for a designer, I recommend her highly. And Collective Muse, Rhett Smith, who is hiding from me. There you are, Rhett. You're in the very back. So thank you, Rhett, and thank you, Collective Muse. I would like to point to the attendee packet very quickly, and I won't eat up too much of Andrew's time, but if you go ahead and access your bags there. In the Torrey Honors Institute or Biola University folder, you're going to see an attendee packet. Please feel free to look through there to see what time our sessions are held, and please note that some of the sessions are not in the GBC Theater area, which is located directly behind our booth. I'd like to draw your attention to this first ad. I would like to announce that next year we will not be holding GodBlogCon. Nope. Next year we're going to hold the Christian Web Conference. GodBlogCon is going away, and it is expanding and becoming a whole new thing. We're very excited about this project. As opposed to a conference just for Christian bloggers primarily, this is a conference for Christian web people, web entrepreneurs, people who are looking to connect with church organizations, people who are in a church doing web work. We've realized that in this age of Twitter and Flickr and Facebook, things are just different than they were when we first founded the conference a few years ago. And so what we're doing is we're trying to broaden our scope. We want to be the web industry conference for Christians. We want you to come here to meet people who are actively working in the industry and to figure out what the landscape is. And that's why we sync you here at Blog World, where you can see the embodied web and all the companies that are working to build the technologies to help you get your message out, to help you get your product out, and most importantly, to help advance the kingdom. So if you're interested in becoming a sponsor for that conference, you can contact Chris at chris@godblogcon.com. And if you contact before December 1st, we can talk about getting you a sponsorship for up to 25% off some of our packages. So I would encourage you to do that. Also, more information will be available at godblogcon.com. We're going to keep the domain name. We'll be releasing more information about the conference in the coming weeks. Today I would like to welcome Andrew Jones. Andrew Jones comes all the way from the United Kingdom to speak to us. Andrew has been blogging for 11 years, so he really has an idea of what's going on in the web. We believe that whatever is going to happen with this web thing, and frankly we think the web is going places, we think that whatever is going to happen with this web thing, it hasn't happened yet, whatever it is going to be. And our strategy is pretty simple. We want all of you to be actively pursuing whatever it is going to be, and we want to help you figure out what it is so that when it happens, you're there to be a formative role, a formative part of making it happen. Andrew Jones has a pretty good idea of what it looks like. Andrew has been blogging for 11 years. He's done missional and pastoral work. He was born in the United Kingdom. He was born in New Zealand, but he lives in the United Kingdom. He joins us today to talk a little bit about what it looks like specifically from the standpoint of a missional church. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Andrew Jones.
Could someone tell me how to work a PC? I'm trying to make the PowerPoint move across to the next slide. I'm pushing arrows. Every arrow that is here, I'm pushing it.
Those of us who are Christians use
Mac.
So.
Yeah. Right, I'll let somebody push some buttons there and make it work. Hey, really, really, really good to be here and with you. That's good. Which one did you push? Oh, just that. There we go.
Back.
That's good.
Right.
Oh, it's working now. Good. Fantastic. I realize that some of you aren't watching Darren Rowell speak right now on pro blogging and how to make money off your blog. He introduced me this morning as the guy that inspired him to start blogging back in, I think, 2001, 2002. He went on to make $100,000 the first year, paid off his mortgage, and he's been making six figures ever since. So his session is going to be quite full, I think. I met him in Australia earlier this year, and I said, "You really owe me a coffee." So he took me out and bought me a coffee, and it was a large coffee, because he really did owe me, I felt. And he paid for it, and yeah, and if there was a tip, he would have paid for it too, I think. Fear's fear, isn't it? My name is Andrew Jones, and I blog at Tall Skinny Kiwi. I used to blog at Andrew's Tea Salon in the 90s, and I changed in about 2001. There's another session on, by the way, right now or in a few minutes, called Blogger to Typepad. It's about the transition. My advice, don't go to it. Just don't change. Don't go from Blogger to Typepad like I did. Because when I had my old Tall Skinny Kiwi on Blogspot, it did really, really, really well. In fact, they told me it made number 3 one week, which means it was like the third best blog spot in the world. It beat all the Iraqi blogs, it beat all the political blogs, and most importantly, it beat Dave Barry's funny blog, which I thought was great. And I said, thank you for telling me that, but actually I stopped that blog about 2 months ago and switched over to Typepad. I didn't realize that it was just Google traffic that was actually keeping that thing alive, and had I known that, I wouldn't have switched. Really, keep the blog you have. Don't switch. If you do want to change your platform, start another blog with another name. Run a couple of them. Don't lose your Google credibility like I did. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the missional church in the internet age. A little bit about me first. My name is Andrew Jones. I am living in the UK, but I've spent 10 years in the States. My wife is American. I have 5 kids. We live in Orkney Islands, very beautiful place, but we actually travel around a lot of countries. I've been to about 40. I'm a missionary. I work as a mission consultant. My kids were here in Las Vegas about 3 years ago. We were on our way to God Blog Con, believe it or not, but didn't make it, got sidetracked, ended up at a great casino. Just on the way out of Nevada, which had a roller coaster. I didn't spend any money at the casino, but we dressed up for it. We dressed up with our red, white, and blue. That's redneck, white trash, blue collar. And I had a mullet wig, luckily, and so we put on our mullet wigs and went through the casino and then enjoyed the roller coaster at the end. But anyway, let me start with this. You might be a faith blogger if... And by the way, the first time I ever heard the word faith blogger was about God Blog Con. I think you guys may have kind of coined that. You might recognize some of these. If you sit at the back row of church because that's where the Wi-Fi signal is strongest, you might be a faith blogger. If your sermons allow both comments and trackbacks, you might be a faith blogger. If you have ever asked God to let you upload your photo and profile to the Lamb's Book of Life, you might be a faith blogger. I'm channeling Jeff Foxworthy here. If your prayers are 140 characters or less, because that's all that Twitter allows, you might be a faith blogger. If you think Adam was a Mac guy, Ken and John, because he was tempted by the new Apple, and if you think Moses was a PC man because he came down from the mountain with 2 tablets, you might be a faith blogger. If the most valuable assets you plan to leave your children are covered by a Creative Commons license, if you get Christmas cards from the doctors at the carpal tunnel surgery, if you have ever fantasized about video blogging the rapture, you might be a faith blogger. If you think what a friend we have in Jesus has something to do with Facebook, that was sent in by Steve Lewis, and when the roll is called up yonder has something to do with RSS syndication, if you think clicking on Jesus' words in red will take you to a new page, Daniel Kerr sent that one. If you think Streams in the Desert is a blog from Las Vegas, if your idea of being surrounded by a cloud of witnesses is hanging out with the bloggers at God Blog Con, you might be a faith blogger. Yeah, thank you. There's a story of a woman at a well. There she met Jesus, and it changed her life. And she went back to her town and just had to tell everybody. I think if anyone could have been a faith blogger, it would have been the woman at the well. I just love her story. She It's not just a story about a woman that became a publisher. It's also a story of what it means to be missional. Because when we talk about being missional, we're talking about doing mission the way Jesus did it and using him as an example. In the way that God sent the Son, so he sends us out to participate in his mission. Mission begins with God. We participate with him. When Jesus went to the well, he didn't have a bucket to draw from. He went to a place that we would probably call a third space, a place for conversation, a place maybe like what our blogs would be in today's world. And there he met this woman. And the woman asked one of the most perceptive questions in the whole of the New Testament. Which mountain? She said, which mountain do we need to worship on? And Jesus, I mean, it really is an amazing question, because so much of the Bible is about the mountain of the Lord that's going, and the mountain of Zion, and the temple that was destroyed, the new temple that's coming, the old mountain, the new mountain, the mountain in Daniel's, in Nebuchadnezzar's revelation that Daniel interprets. Remember, the rock became a mountain that just became a kingdom, and it filled the whole earth. So the question, which mountain, was a really significant question. Jesus said it's not going to be a physical mountain. It's not going to be in Jerusalem or Samaria. It's going to be something other, and true worshipers will worship in spirit and truth. Or in other words, the church is going to be virtual, and it will find ways to aggregate around a spiritual kind of a praise. There's not going to be sacrifices in the temple anymore. We'll have spiritual praises, and we will make the invisible visible by loving each other, by sharing things with each other, by having all things in common, and by our praises. The church has always been virtual. So when you hear this cyber church versus traditional church, it's a false dichotomy. The church has always been virtual. We find ways to make it visible. She understood this. She went back and she just told everybody about it. She published it. She praised. You know, the word praise means to publish. Did you know that? It means to make public what God has done. My Old Testament professor told me that you can't praise God by yourself. You can thank him and you can worship him, but for praise to be praised, it has to be made public. You have to actually tell somebody else. And that's what we do. We publish glad tidings daily. So she went back and she published. She told people, and this is what I love about it. She said, come and see a man that told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Christ? I love that. Come and see a man. It's all about him. It's about Jesus. I hope your blogs are about Jesus and what he's doing through you as a faith blogger, as a Christian blogger. I hope it's focused on him and how he has made a difference in your life. Come and see a man who told me everything I ever did. God knows everything we've ever done. He's interested in everything we do. Your blogs should be holistic. They should be about everything you do, because it's important to God, it's important to people who read, it's going to be really important to your grandkids who one day will read your blogs. And you know what, your sermons might be fantastic, but they're going to go through looking for what cereal you liked in the morning and what was your favorite color and just things about you. And you're leaving a legacy for them. So blog your whole life. Don't be scared. Blog your whole life. She had a holistic testimony. And then she asked a question. She said, could this be the Christ? If she had said, this is the Christ, they would have laughed at her. They would have said, who are you? You don't work in the temple. You're not a priest. She was just a nobody. But she said, could this be the Christ? She asked a question. And everybody had to come out and answer that question for themselves. Some of the greatest moments in the blogosphere is when somebody asks an interesting question. Starts the ball rolling. The comments come in. And people feel like they're joining a conversation. They get to participate in it. It's not about arguing whether you're right or wrong. It's about trying to find the answer to the question. She would have been a great faith blogger if they had had the technology back then. So just a quick word about being missional before we move on. We're talking about being missional in the internet age. It's about the sovereignty of God. God determines mission. God initiates mission. We participate with him. The word has a lot to do with the original Missio Dei, the mission of God, with the Germans thinking that God starts off mission, it's his mission, he handles it, but we participate with him. Sometimes it just means being in a place without doing a whole lot, not bringing in a lot of tools or programs. Just sometimes we just say, don't just do something, stand there, like Jesus did at the well. And you never know what you're going to get. It's a little bit like a box of chocolates, because when you start a new work for God, you just don't know where it's going to go. That's what it's about being missional. We don't bring a lot of things with us. Jesus didn't have a bucket. He borrowed a boat, and he borrowed a room, and he borrowed all kinds of stuff. And then he sent out his short-term mission team to tell him the same thing. Don't bring the bag. Don't bring the extra sandals. There'll be stuff for you when you get there. When we do mission in the internet age, we use the tools that are already there. We use the platforms that are already there. We try not to bring a lot of our old world thinking into the new world. We try not to mix the old media with the new media. Otherwise, we end up representing when we should be recapitulating. We should be starting native forms and then building from there. What I like about the story most of all, though, is that it's a story that starts with a well and it ends with a spring. Because Jesus promised her that he would give to her a well that would last forever, eternal life, welling up inside her. And sometimes our blogs can be wells. Wells are really good for storing stuff. Remember Joseph got stuck in a well because they didn't know what to do with him? They just were holding on until some marketers came by. Sometimes bloggers are like that. They have a good idea, they're just waiting for somebody to buy it, and they'll stick it on a blog for a little while. Or maybe they just want to stuff stuff away. But a blog should not be a well. A blog should be a spring. And so this is the question I really want you to hold in your mind during the whole weekend. How can I turn my blog from a well into a spring? How can I, instead of just having a container for stuff and for thoughts and for images and for sermons and for ideas, how can I actually have it be a life-giving spring that reflects the life of Christ in me that's coming out? How can I turn it from a well to a spring? How can I be a person that hides, move from being a person that hides from people to being a person that just chases them out and wants to be found? So anyway, I just wanted to share that as a way to begin. Just some thoughts from the scriptures. People have asked me, are you the first Christian blogger? And no, I've met a guy who was blogging in 1996. His name was Joshua Rudd, and his blog was called Rear View Window. It's still around. He's a web designer in San Francisco. Both of us were working as church planters with the Southern Baptists in America, and both working for the Baptist General Convention of Texas, and both of us having lost our funding when they dismantled the Church Multiplication Center. So it's interesting. As I look back on my blogging career, although I wouldn't call it a career, there have been a number of milestones, and I just wanted to share them with you, just as a way of looking back a little bit and seeing how things have changed. Really, for me, I mean, I was living in San Francisco in the mid-90s, and I watched the internet kind of pop up around me. I was inspired by a number of blogs that we didn't use the word blogging in the 90s, but there were people using it as a diary instead of using it as a vanity page. It was something that they would use to be dynamic rather than static, or a spring rather than a well, if you like. But I didn't know how to get onto it until I found GeoCities, and I got a free web page and a free site, and my wife learned HTML and started coding this thing for me, and then I ended up with Andrew's Tea Salon, which really no one hardly ever read. A few people came on and read it. It was just me saying, here I am today, and I'm doing this, and I'm thinking this, and really, you know, I've done that for decades. I've been a missionary for 25 years, and I've been sending out monthly prayer reports. You know, pray for me. I'm in this country, and I'm doing this, and I'm doing that. And so switching to something that was much more immediate meant that I could do it daily rather than monthly, but it also meant I could do it without losing my bits of paper, because, you know, we bloggers, we don't do paper, right? You know, we do this, and we have it forever. So anyway, we ended up with a website, but it was tedious to have to write that in all the time. And so when Blogger came out, there was a way of archiving, and it just changed everything. I mean, think about it. Every time you did a post, you actually had to write down the date, and then you had to make a whole new page. every time you wanted to make a post. And then what do you do with it once you put your other one on? You have to totally make it disappear or tuck it away somewhere. So what Blogger did was they came up with a way to archive it, or in other words, just to push it down the page. Every time you blogged a new one, it would not only put a little time stamp on it, but it would move it down the page. It was wonderful. It was turning the well into a spring. And not only that, but they would also move it aside every month into another container. It's like coming home from school and your mother's tidied your room and everything's disappeared and she says, "Oh, I just put last month's stuff over here." And you're like, "Thanks, Mum. Can you do that every month?" She's like, "Yeah, sure, sweetheart." And that really, it was like, this is just incredible. So, yeah, blogger.com for me. How many people here started with Blogger? All right. Anyone still have Blogger? All right. Less. It's good. Blogger's good. I still recommend it. Although back in the day, you had to code everything. And you had to learn HTML, which wasn't a difficult thing. There weren't comments back then either. So really, it was a one-way conversation until comments came. And I felt this was another milestone in blogging, because before comments, there was a one-way conversation. And I remember getting people email me stuff, and I used to take pieces of their email, and some of you nodding your heads, you probably did the same thing. You had some feedback, you're like, "Wow, I got some feedback." And so you'd get that email, and then you'd kind of paste it into your blog post and say, "Well, guess what? Somebody responded, and this is what they said, and this is what I said." And then you're having to kind of recall these conversations from the email. But then comments came out. And all of a sudden, people could speak into your blog. And all of a sudden, it was a two-way conversation. All of a sudden, you could say something, and then you could say, "Can I get a witness?" And you'd have two or three people coming in behind you and responding. And not just responding, but also testifying that what you said was right, and also time-stamped. Tags also was an amazing way to be found, because when I first started blogging, you couldn't find anything. Netscape was the browser we used, and when you did a search through Netscape, it basically scanned about one quarter of the internet, which wasn't a whole lot, and it wasn't much there to begin with. When we started doing tags, it was a way to get found by each other. I remember we did a thing called the Grid Blog. A girl called Ashley started this in 2003, 2004, and the world's first Grid Blog. There was maybe, I don't know, 50, 60 of us that all jumped in, and we all did a post on a subject, and then we put two semicolons as a tag into it, and we could find it all on the same day. And within a week, some of us Christians who were actually involved in the Grid Blog, we did an Advent Grid Blog where we did it around a religious idea and had the same concept. And then every year we've done Pentecost Grid Blogs, and now the name's changed to Synchro Blogs. And I think a couple of months ago I did a missional Synchro Blog with about 50 bloggers. And again, it's tagging it so that we can all find it. Everybody uses the same tag. You can get it found. It's great. Lastly, I think widgets, for me personally, has been a milestone, because I've had my blog, and I've also had my other social platform stuff going on as well, and the widgets have been a way to integrate the two, to bring the two together. For example, this morning, I just tweeted that I was preparing for this talk, but by twittering, which automatically updates my Facebook profile, the Twitter actually comes up inside my blog, inside my little widget. So all of a sudden, it's bringing them all together. It's making it more of a well. Widgets, I think they're great. I think I had one of the first ones, like 2002. Moreover, News offered a free little, some of you remember, maybe you had it before I did. They had a free little widget that had news updated from an RSS feed, and I had one of those on my blog, and I was the only blogger that had a little widget on. We didn't even call it a widget back then, but I had my own little updating news feed coming in. I was so proud of it, and it was Java-based, and I hacked into the Java to try and make it do things and ended up ruining it, and so it came out all funny, but I left it on because it was just so cool and didn't cost me any money. So anyway, we've come a long way since then, and if you've ever been to my blog recently, it's looking actually quite outdated. It's in desperate need of an overhaul. But it has been a very interesting 10 years, and I think it's great that you're actually changing the idea of GodBlogCon and moving into Christian web in a much larger way, because I think blogging is becoming live streaming. And it's more than just blogging. Blogging is one platform, but I know many of you, and I'm the same way. We publish in so many different ways. Our blog is one way, but we send photos to Flickr, and if I'm doing a PowerPoint, it might end up on slideshare.net, and we're Twittering, and we're sending stories to Dig. And actually, we got all these feeds going on, so more and more, the blog is becoming a place where all these feeds are happening, where they all come together. And I think more they'll begin to look like a dashboard in which you can just see, here's my recipes and here's my this and my that. Blogging will just be so much more holistic. So I think it's a good move to do that. But it's been a great 10 years, and what a strange trip it's been. It's a great opportunity, obviously, what God is doing through our blogs. Once I put a little tracker device on my blog, which I don't do because they get addictive, you know, when you want to see how many hits and where they're all coming from, you can get hooked on that, and I don't like that because it changes the way I think about blogging. I do blog for myself, and I blog for God, and I blog for posterity, I don't do it for the hits and for the people. So, but I did do it for a little while, and I found out that 152 countries had sent people to come and look at my blog. And that's a lot of countries where you just can't freely go out and talk about Jesus. But here, people could come on and read what I had to say about spirituality and theology. And so it really is a fantastic opportunity to get into the 1024 window, 1024 pixels, the screen that gives people, yeah, I know, it's kind of corny, but most people access information today on their computer screen. Most people have a screen that's 1024 by 768. So when they want information, whether it's a recipe or it's something about God, they're going to access it through the 1024 window. So what a fantastic opportunity for us as bloggers to put the face of Christ on that window, so that Christ's face can play on 10,000 spaces or 10,000 pages or even more. Fantastic opportunity. So I encourage you to get found. If you've got something to say, get found. If you have something going on in your life and you have not every blog post you need to get found, right? Sometimes you just, you know, you want to blog about a friend you just met or you had something for breakfast and it's not a big deal. But sometimes you got something to say and it's burning in you and you need to get it out and you need it to get it found. So I challenge you to make every effort to shout it from the rooftops when it's your moment, when it's your time, when you have something to say. One way to do this is to put your face on the go back to this one here. I did a quick search this morning on GodBlogCon and see what I thought I'll see what would come up, and I found myself coming in fourth, which is great. GodBlog at the top, and Acton coming in beneath, and LaShawn, hello, beating the heck out of me. Good on ya. And then me. However, I've got a double whammy, LaShawns. Look at that. And you only got one. So, but I do want to show you that if I put in GodBlogCon 2008, then I beat LaShawn and I came in third. So just, yeah. Not that I'm obsessive or anything, but I do like to know how these things work, and for the last couple of years, I actually have done a lot of research, and I'm fascinated by the eyes of Google and what they give favor to. So I thought what I would do, just to take a quick diversion, is to maybe give what I think are some of the five ways you can get your blog post in the window, which is the top five. All right, I've got five in mind. I'm tempted to throw it out and see what you would think would be the best way, but but can you look at that and tell me why you think I'm coming number three and maybe I shouldn't? Anybody yell out a reason?
Tags?
Yeah? Although you can't see that I've tagged that. I actually have tagged it, and I've probably tagged it with a 2008, because in this particular one, somebody was looking for 2008. So that's one of my top five is tags. And when you tag, think about what people are going to type in, those keywords they're looking for. Those are going to be your tags.
How old is your blog?
Yeah, history. Exactly. That's another one, too. That's why you shouldn't leave your platform. You've already built some history. Google wants to know, are you a spam site that opened up yesterday and you're going to close in 3 or 4 days' time before they catch you? Or have you been around for a couple of years? History means a lot. So yeah, it's been around for a few years, maybe longer than some of these ones, and I can cash in on that. Also, history of your individual posts. You may have a post that has been around for 2 or 3 years. It's already got some links on it. It's got some history. And you can actually recycle that, reticulate it, bring it back into the present by changing the date on it. It's already got some history. If something breaks and you've already got something that performs well, bring it into the present. What I do is I move it back and I say this was the original one, and then I put something fresh on it and tidy it up a little bit. So I'm honest about it. But oftentimes they do really well. Okay, two more. Yeah? Yes, in the first sentence. Yeah, I think the first sentence helps in when people have feeds. Like they're only going to read the first few sentences on their feed and they're going to click to go and see that or not. But I would say having the use of the keyword in the actual address, in the URL. If you look at the URL, the thing that ends in HTML, you'll see GodBlogCon 2008 is on there. Hold on, let me go to this other one here. Okay, you'll notice that GodBlogCon is number one. They own that. They rule. They've even got their own little, Google, somebody probably from Google's hand-coded that and given them their own little deal. No one's going to knock them off the perch. They are king of the hill, and that's good. They own their story. And if you have a ministry, you should own the story of your ministry. It's important. Take a look at my one. It's called Interview for GodBlogCon. And then take a look at the URL. Do you see something different about it? Yeah, they're different. Because if you have GodBlogCon in your actual URL, you're going to perform a lot better than if you don't. So what I do on this one, I wanted to call it Interview for GodBlogCon. If I had called it that and posted it, the URL would have been /interview4/HTML, because TypeEd only gives you 15 characters to work with. So what I do is I use the keywords, name it, post it, and it gets locked in with a special address. Then I pull it back into edit mode, change the title into something catchier, repost it, but the URL is already established. Got it? I call it a two-step. Yeah?
Isn't there value to having the URL, the title, and the headline match all three be the exact same?
I'm not aware of any advantage in that. I just know that if the keywords are in the URL, it's going to perform better than anything else. And if you find yourself coming 7 or 8, take a look at the ones that have beaten you, and almost every single time the keywords are in the URL, and they're probably not in yours. Do you think that's...
I do, but...
Okay, you might be right. Who knows? Who knows? Behold, I show you a mystery. John. Oh, I'm sure you do have a lot of traffic.
Doesn't a 301 redirect help push that traffic to you?
A what?
A 301 redirect, doesn't that forward some of your...
I don't know.
Traffic mode?
I don't think a traffic meter would forward that. I'm not quite sure. If it does redirect to a new page, I don't think you're
excited. I thought you'd be passionate.
Time to move on. All right, we're getting bogged down. Let's make a move. Okay, dark side to blogging. I won't say much about this, but I do want to say that it is possible to be the ugly blogger. And, you know, sometimes we don't think about this in the English language world and in a rich country, but very often the blogosphere gives a lopsided picture of the Christian church. Because it favors richer countries with broadband and internet access and lots of computers. It favors the controversial discussions because they attract more traffic and more links. Sometimes attracts the debtor churches because they have more time to get into arguments and blogging. And the live churches are all too busy discipling people and leading people to Jesus and feeding the lambs. It favors the English language, it favors the already powerful because of the law of preferential attachment. If you want to read about it, get a book called Linked by Albert Laszlo Barabasi, The Law of Preferential Attachment, which is why some blogs become absolutely massive. It's having to do with scale-free networks that I don't have time to talk about. But take a look at that. There is a dark side. And also personal addiction to blogging. Take a blog fast every once in a while. Nail your blog to the cross. Tell Jesus it's not that important. Walk away and come back a month later and then see what you got and go again. And do it on a periodical way, because otherwise you can just get locked into this addiction to hits and to links and to numbers and statistics. And if you find yourself checking the stats two or three times a day, you might have a problem. Okay? But there's so much potential. Whatever the future looks like for the missional church in the internet age, it has a lot to do with new media rather than old media, and the shift that's now taking place, the shift that we're finding ourselves in the middle of. I don't have a whole lot of time, but I know many of you live in San Diego, and there's a guy called Lev Manovich who's written a lot on new media. He has a book called The Language of New Media that you can download as a PDF. And I know you're bloggers, you don't buy books, but you can download this one for free. There's other really good books I mentioned linked to you. Wikinomics is also an excellent book, but this book is ready to go, and you can download it anytime you want. Some of you probably are doing it right now. Principles of New Media, Numerical Representation, or basically, anything can become a number. It can be described mathematically, or that scanned image can become a digital piece of new media. Modularity, your web page can draw from many different pieces and put them together in a unique way. Automation, you can apply algorithms to new media because they're numeric. You can command it to do something, to get bigger or smaller, or to aggregate itself. Variability, transcoding. Transcoding means it's not translating, it's transcoding. When old media becomes new media, it actually changes the very form of it. The two things that stand out to me when it comes to the missional church in the internet age is, number one, we're talking about transcoding and not just translating. Sometimes when we come from a church background, we bring our old church background with us. We translate it, but we don't transcode it. We don't go native and start with the native platforms and build up. So we end up with all kinds of silly things, cyber church and church 2.0. And some of you are probably a little bit lost on the new media. Don't worry about it. You can always go back and take another look. But regarding Church 2.0, there are cyber churches. This is a cyber seminary I used to have in about 2004. We used to do this inside the Habbo Hotel. And once a week, we would all meet together and we called it Suddenly Seminary, because it wasn't really seminary, but we were, teaching each other, downloading PDFs and discussing things. And sometimes we'd have 20, 30, sometimes more people come. And, it's kind of, you've seen a physical seminary, here's a virtual seminary. And you've seen physical church, here's a cyber church. And I've done the cyber church thing. It's kind of fun. I don't like Second Life very much. I've got all these avatars walking around because I can't remember their names. Really, can you? I mean, you have to give them the stupid name, and you can never remember it. And we don't write it down because we're bloggers. We don't do paper, And so in my mind, there's all these homeless hobo kind of avatars walking around or sitting around a big virtual campfire. And I own them all, and I can't remember their names. And they're all like, Master will come for us one day. But really, Church 2.0 doesn't have so much to do with bringing the old church structures into the internet. It has a lot more to do with what we're doing now, with starting with platforms and then seeing where they go, seeing how we can use them to encourage each other. How can we use them to share Christ, to support each other, to have all things in common? Because we, as it says in the Hebrews, we don't have a earthly city that we're looking forward to. We have a heavenly city. Therefore, let's bring our praises out. Let's encourage each other. Let's do good. Let's make the visible, make the invisible visible by our actions. So let's find ways in which the media can help us. Just a word from Phyllis Tickle about the church. She says, the church, capital C, is not really a thing so much as it is a network, in exactly the same way that the internet or World Wide Web, or for that matter, gene regulatory or metabolic networks, are not things or entities. She's one of a growing number of writers that are saying, if you want to look at how the church is now being formed, take a look at the internet and the web and the blogosphere and look for those patterns, crowdsourcing, collaboration rather than competition. It's a mixed economy, Archbishop Rowan Williams would say if he was here in Las Vegas. It's both and. It's not cyber church versus physical church. It's both and it's not traditional church or inherited church versus the emerging church. The fact is, church is becoming modular. We are having multiple church experiences, multiple communities, and they all weave together. Some are online, some are offline, some are in a building, some are in a coffee shop, some are chat rooms, and there are so many ways. The same has happened to banking. 20 years ago, you could ask the question, where do you bank? And you could point to a branch and maybe even a branch manager. If I asked you today, how do you manage your financial services or where do you bank? It's like, well, I've got this card and this program, and you would point to all kinds of things. It's a complex world. Church is becoming missional inside a complex world and therefore complex itself. And a church experience today would be much more modular than singular. We're becoming becoming participators more than spectators. It's a new reformation. And the old Reformation had a new media attached to it. Their media was the printing press. You've heard Hugh Hewitt talk about this. For the mainstream media, for the MSN, it is 1449 and 1517 at the same moment, he said, in his book called Blog. What he was saying was, it's the printing press and it's Martin Luther nailing his thesis on the wall at the same time. With our revolution, and now with our reformation, we have a whole new way of doing media. And it's a different kind of reformation. Douglas Rushkoff said the first reformation turned hearers into readers. But this revolution and this reformation is turning readers into writers. And what we are dealing with now is a world of post-post-literacy, where a couple of years ago people were saying, yeah, the TV's killing the books, and Neil Postman was talking about this, and now we're entering the age of post-literacy. But that's changed again. Now young people are writing like crazy. Generation text, they call them. Some write more than they read. And we are participators more than spectators, writers more than readers. And it all has to do with giving ourselves away. This is why we blog. We give ourselves away. This is the heart of ministry. We give ourselves away. And in doing so, we become part of the gift economy, which is changing the way we think about money, changing the way we exchange goods and services. There's the market economy, command economy, but now the gift economy that we used to see in tribal societies, we're seeing it now operate on the internet. And it will change the way we do church. Turn your well into a spring. Be a spring. Let Jesus' life come through you. Blog your whole life. Become a spring. So I urge you to blog on. I urge you to blog one another. Blog hard or stay writing books. Anyone have any questions or comments? I have about 5 minutes before we finish. Yes? Yeah, again, I'm tapping into Lev Menovich's ideas on new media as modular rather than singular. You know, if you've been to IKEA, you know that modular is the idea that you can buy modular pieces that fit in different ways, and you can take a piece of a bookshelf and put it into a bed. Modular church as opposed to singular church, I would say that we used to think of church in a singular way. This is my church, where I go, and the church was my Bible study, my Sunday morning, everything happened in one church. The reality today is that people are involved in multiple spiritual communities. They're involved in certain websites. They go to conferences like this, and they would consider that part of their spiritual life. They may also go to a church service on a Sunday. They might be in a prayer group, and they're in a mission group, and they go feed the hungry with this group, and they're beginning to see it not as this is my church and these people are not, but rather church for me is a modular experience, and it's the sum of all these spiritual communities that I'm a part of, and I would call that modularity, which I think is we can already see it on the internet, and it's possible that we are influenced by the internet and we are becoming more modular in our thinking. It's also possible that we were already modular in our mind and we are creating the internet and we are shaping the web based on what we think. The chicken and the egg, or the egg and the chicken. I think it's both and. We are influencing and we are influenced by the internet. Yeah. I'm finding more as somebody that does work with new people starting churches. It's the accountability is often tied to relationship more than institution. But what it could do in the future, I think it has some great possibilities, because if you If you were part of a church because you lived in a particular geographical location, if you're young and you're a student, you might be there for 4 years, but then you move and you actually cut those relationships, and then you have to start all over again because you moved geographically. If your relationships are built through relationships, and then you also have a lot of online relationships, 4 or 5 years later, you may have moved 2 or 3 times, but you still have those relationships, and you're still connected to a body of Christ, your church, that is multiple groups. So I think long term, we could be seeing in-depth relationships rather than little chapters in somebody's life of where they've lived. Yeah. Well, there might be some differing opinions on what the biblical model is, because they didn't have professional clergy for a couple of hundred years. But right now, you're under my authority. And so this is, if you like, this is an aggregation rather than a congregation. And in a way, we are believers. We are gathering again as living stones around Christ, the cornerstone. So in this particular situation, there is a hierarchy, and I'm in charge. It's my hour. So there, which is, I'm not, so yeah, but you know what? When you go off to lunch, you're going to be in another aggregation, and it'll be much more free-flowing. And but it is a good question. Where is the authority? And I do think that, Thomas Friedman's book is very interesting, The World is Flat. I actually agree with it mostly, but I also think that we're looking at a new kind of hierarchy, and it's a dynamic hierarchy rather than a static hierarchy. And I think the early church had the fivefold ministries. They had apostles and prophets, teachers, pastors, and people functioned where it was their time. They stood up. There was leadership, but it wasn't the same person all the way through for everything. It was more the evangelist first, and then this kind of, if you like, kind of a spring rather than a well, kind of a reticulation of and a dynamic moving of the right people at the right time. So there's always authority, but the question is who gives it, and when do they move away? So, yeah, good question, though. Thank you. I have talked about it a lot. There is... the French are writing a lot about it, not so much in America. I'm trying to think of a good book. If you read Being Given by Jean-Luc Marion in France, but although it's quite a complicated book, there really aren't any good books to actually give you. If you look at the idea of Creative Commons and if you look at the idea of open source thinking, what you come down with is basically when you create a product, you can either sell it or you can give it away. If you sell it, you get remuneration. If you give it away, you get reputation. And a lot of the reason we have Wikipedia and we have Linux and other things is because what used to only happen in the scientific field and also in the missions field, where people giving away stuff for nothing, now we have it in the geek field, and people are creating things and giving them away because of reputation, because a good name is better than riches. And sometimes when you do give and you increase that name or that platform, that actually gets you into new areas. So sometimes it's actually better to give something away than to try and sell it. Or in other words, if you create a little a widget or something, you might be able to sell it for a couple of $100. You might even get a couple of thousand for it, and maybe a few hundred people will use it. But what about if 3 or 4 million people could use it if you gave it for nothing? And that might lead to something else. So it's a different way of thinking, but it is affecting the way we do things. And now we're asking ourselves, do we give it or do we sell it? And we are bloggers because we're giving it away rather than writing a book. We could write a book and sell 500 copies, but we could also have 1 million people come and read our post, and we are choosing to go with the free post.
One more question.
Yeah, one more question. Yeah. I've personally had a very big struggle with it, and and I still don't know what to do. I've always felt that my particular blog, Tall Skinny Kiwi, was something that wasn't really for profit. And so I did throw some Google ads on it once or twice, but I never took the money out. I figure it's probably going to go to charity. But I wouldn't have a problem with doing that if I felt that was the way in which I should go. And I didn't realize till this morning that so many people were making so much money off their blogs. So it is a struggle for me, but I'm not knocking it. And I probably need to figure that out, how I can do better. But at the same time, there's also a place just to have a blog for not for monetary reasons, just because you want to get it out. And freely we've received, freely we give. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. God bless you.